Past 10 on a Monday morning, and it's the Dave Charles Show, brought to you proudly by Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito. As mentioned at the start of the show, my special guest this morning, Craig Burton, has been a name that if you are a rugby fan, you will know well, particularly if you're a rugby fan in KZN. He was one of the stellar lineup of Sharks players in the recent past, and then had an international career in France. Interesting to look back at these things. Craig, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you on the Dave Charles Show. And I have to ask you a question that I've been really keen to ask a professional sportsman. When you were growing up, was it always your dream to be a professional rugby player, or did you have other aspirations?
It was never, as you got older, and so you became aware of the Sharks, the Springboks, slowly it became a dream. But how I was introduced into the sport was purely, there was no pressure put on me by my parents. It was enjoying what you do, make the most of it. They did encourage me always to take part in a team sport, to teach you your role within a team, how to work within a team environment, but then also to take part in individual sport as well.
So it was always sport, though. You never had aspirations of being a psychiatrist or
I wanted to be a physiotherapist, architect, it chopped and changed. And I studied electrical engineering, heavy current. So at one stage, that was part of the journey as well. But it's very interesting to see how your journey takes you. And every step you take, how you learn from that. But you can always branch off in different directions at any stage.
Heavy current electrical engineering. I bet you didn't dream about being an engineer in electrical engineering terms as a kid. Because the world doesn't, unless I'm completely wrong, generally speaking, if you ask a child what you want to do, this, well, it's like what they see on television. You know, I want to be a policeman. I want to be a firefighter. You never had those dreams.
So I always looked up to athletics. I loved watching athletics as a kid, especially the 100-meter sprints. So my involvement in athletics with school has always sort of guided the path in sports as well. But as you get older and through your education, you see what subjects you're better at, and you start, you tend to gear your next steps towards those subjects. And that was physiotherapy, electrical engineering, which wasn't necessarily a desire or a big interest within me. And that came to pass soon afterwards when I committed to the rugby journey. It was very challenging to commit to both.
Were you a schoolboy rugby player of note?
Not of note. I played first team. Really enjoyed the chapter at school, whereas at Maritzburg College, we had a fantastic season. But it was never really, I still study while pursuing my rugby career, so it wasn't all eggs in one basket.
One hears that there's tremendous pressure on schoolboy rugby, particularly from the parents of wanting their kids to be stars. And as a result of that, they sometimes tend to almost overstep the mark with regard to performance-altering substances, etc. Did you encounter that at all at school?
No, never. And I was blessed to have parents who supported me, never pushed me.
But did you play against guys that were doping?
I think it was very early on. There wasn't testing that took place at school during those times.
But it's fairly obvious. You see a dramatic transformation, particularly in body mass.
There's a transformation, and I don't want to take away any credit for those who put in the sacrifices, the hours to get that physique, to get that level of fitness, that level of strength. Are there guys who take the shortcut? I'm sure they are.
You didn't?
No, never. So, you know, is it discipline and hard work has always been what I've sort of strived towards, and there's never been a desire to take a shortcut ever.
So you put on the pounds by hard work, effort in the gym, on the field, and you became quite a you look at a photograph of your physique, and it was fairly impressive, shall we say. But you played hooker.
So I played hooker, yeah.
And often one, certainly back in the day, the hooker was a little guy. Fast, agile, but you know, little guy being held up by those two props. You're not a little guy. How did that work?
So I've had to, there's a big transformation. I actually used to play wing. And then they converted me to hooker. So it was a big body transformation that you had to go through. Now all of a sudden you're using your neck, different muscle groups. So, and I had to put on the weight as well. So in the sporting, in the rugby aspect, everything's goal driven. It's very scheduled. You have you're blessed to have a very good team around you who pushes you. You've got to meet a certain weight. You've got to be so strong in the gym for your bench press, for your squats, for your speed, your 10 meter, your 40 meter, your shuttles, your Broncos. So you're very driven. Very, very driven and pushed. You are pushed because you're getting paid to deliver a certain performance.
That's when you're at that's the big thing. Professional
level. Schoolboy is different. You need to be supported to enjoy what you're doing. Professional, you pay to deliver a certain job. And like in any business world, if you're not, the pressure gets put onto you.
And did you enjoy what you did as a schoolboy in terms of your rugby career?
Loved it. Loved every minute of the journey.
Was that because you were at a good rugby school? And I asked the question because I wasn't at a good rugby school back in the day. It's become a good rugby school subsequently, but it was a very young school, very small school. And we, even as very young kids, we knew we were never going to win a match. And the heartbreaking aspect of that is you run onto the field knowing you're going to lose and the masters say, well, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. And I was constantly butting my head against that. Because that, you know what? That's fair enough if you've got an equal chance. But if you're a hopeless underdog, you're never going to enjoy the game. What would your advice be to kids that are clearly keen to become professional rugby players when it comes to choice of schools?
It's a difficult question because the kids don't always end up making the decision. And I think what I'd encourage every single kid is to go out there, enjoy what you do. Off the back of that, how your journey develops will be able to give you an indication. Never put all your eggs in one basket. You've always got to have a plan B. You never know as a sportsman when your career is going to end. Could be through injury, whatever it is. But if you look at the likes of the rugby players now and the sportsmen whose careers come to an abrupt end, you have to have a plan in place to fall back on. And I've always kept in mind, what's the next chapter? And I was very blessed because before the end of my journey in the rugby, I started thinking about what's next as well.
Ah, well, let's take a little segue, a musical segue, because I want to ask you a couple of questions. One of them is, and it gives you a chance to think about this. You must have had in your career people that influenced you positively, and we'll come back and unpack some of those on the flip side of this. 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. You're on the Dave Charles Show, powered by Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito. I'm in conversation with Craig Burton, former rugby player with the Sharks and international star with some of the French teams that he played with, and we'll get onto those in a sec. He's currently involved in security matters in Bolito, and I think that you're in good hands with Craig. He's a strong guy. Let's get back into the rugby, Craig. In your career, you must have had mentors and influences of various descriptions. And if you had to look back, who's been your strongest influences?
I think my family's been my rock. They've been the foundation that's guided me, supported me in every decision that I've made. And coming into the corporate world, those influences have been more strong than ever.
Okay.
It's a very big transition from going to very well-supported, structured, to all of a sudden you're on your own. You need to start fending for yourself, planning your own day. You're learning a new world. You're stepping out of a rugby world into the corporate world. And I think that was a big challenge. But Val Bartman, the CEO, has been very influential in...
Well, I was going to say, it would appear that there is a kind of a link between ADT Security, which you are the CEO, a local CEO, I believe. Is that right?
No. So for the Fidelity Services Group, so I oversee the growth of the region, and we've just localized the two branches. So
okay.
It's a part of the bigger group. Yeah.
But I
would love to be the CEO.
But certainly you have been absorbed into the world. Absolutely. of ADT and Fidelity and Val Bartman, obviously former Springbok. And rugby players tend to gravitate, well, good ones, tend to gravitate into that sphere. Why?
I used to, a lot of the tours that we used to go on with the Sharks, I used to room with Tendang Tarira Beast, and he was a big part of the Fidelity Services Group at that stage. And we would occasionally chat about life after rugby. What's the next chapter? Very premature. And then COVID struck out of the blue. And all of a sudden, I had a lot of time on my hands, as did everyone, to think about what's the next chapter.
Did COVID, clearly it must have closed down rugby for that period of time when social distancing was imperative. Mm. You couldn't get into a huddle or go into a training camp or anything like that. So what did you do during COVID?
So we got sent training programs to do at home.
On your own.
A lot of the guys didn't have weight, so it was body weight exercises. You couldn't go for a run. You were still bound to the house. So very challenging times. So it gave you a lot of time to think.
So that's when you started making plans for your escape from rugby.
A lot of thought. And I really enjoyed the chapter I was in. I loved it. But Daisy was on the way. The next chapter brought even more excitement to me. I was about to become a father.
Oh.
And at that stage, Val Bartman was the CEO of Fidelity Services Group, as he is. They were a main sponsor of the Sharks. So we would engage after a lot of games with Val Bartman. And I knew nothing about security, absolutely nothing. But I knew of Val Bartman, what he had done for the industry, how he had driven the success of the Fidelity Services Group. At that stage, I believe we were on 59,000 employees. We're now sitting at just over 75,000. So we had the conversation. I got given an opportunity and I started at the bottom. It's the best place to learn. I loved coffee. I had a lot of time on my hands. I set up for the first 3 months coffee meetings every single day with as many successful businessmen as I could get in front of to learn what they do, how they did it, what worked, what didn't work, how to fit into a corporate team. It's very different to a sporting team, how to lead your fellow employees. And it was very challenging, but very exciting. And then we relocated to Bolito. And I too.
What prompted that move to Bolito?
We used to live in Toulon. We lived there for a number of years, then Paris for just under 5 years. And then we moved back. And the buzz was already around Bolito. And if I look at what Bolito had, we had a property in Durban North, but there's such a draw to Bolito. And that was 6 years ago. So we moved to Bolito, very blessed, beautiful view in the heart of Bolito. And I was very influenced by very close family friends, my neighbor, Snow Cogan, and Gary Stratum. And two very different approaches to the corporate world. Snow would focus on the bigger picture, the end goal, the slow journey, slow steps, the importance of investing into your team, relationships, building your team, everything aligned to the end goal, whereas Gary was more of a embracing every single step you take in the journey, celebrating every single small win. And a big challenge came from being so goal-driven in sports, so measured, your stats, your strength, everything. You can't just transition that into the corporate world. And to face the trials and challenges, and I had ambitious pursuits, and I still do in the corporate world, I needed something more than leaning on motivation. And sportsmen, you get inspired by a motivational quote. It becomes your wallpaper. You forget about it. You need another one. I needed a flame of purpose, something that could really drive the discipline that I needed to succeed then as a father and in the corporate world. And I found that purpose in my two girls, Daisy and Millie. And they became the reason, the why behind everything that I did. And then it's a balance because you want to work harder. But if you're away from home too much, you're neglecting your purpose. If you're at home too much, you're not working hard enough. So it was a very tough balance. And for me, my goals that I've set to the Fidelity Services Group are very high. And you realize the legacy that you can leave will never be greater than your kids. And no matter what I've set out to achieve, what I've accomplished, I've poured my heart into the girls.
How old are they?
5 and 2.5. Completely different. Daisy is a little princess and Millie she's wild. But they are so good and they have taught me so much in life. I think lessons you can only learn from your kids. How to be mindful, how to love and embrace the simplicities in life. We had last week, my sister sent Daisy a big package from Amazon or wherever it was. She ordered a big goodies packet with toys and bottles and bracelets. She actually gave me a bracelet for Father's Day. She told me I have to return it today. So I'm enjoying the last few hours.
I was wondering about that. I wasn't going to be,
Hopefully she's not listening because then she'll want it back. And Daisy, she got home from school and she unpacked this big package full of toys and bits and pieces. And I started cooking dinner and I heard all this excitement coming from her room. And I took my coffee. I took a walk down the passage. And she had taken the packet, the packaging, made a hole in it and climbed in like a tortoise and was crawling around the room. The excitement and joy she can get from the simplest things in life has taught me how to really just slow things down and appreciate what you've got.
So having had a lot of attention as a top rugby player in your career, and it was very much focused on you, your life, and there's a lot of evidence to that. If you scan the internet, folks, you'll see what I'm talking about. The rugby players of today are superstars. They're the gladiators of our age, and they get phenomenal amount of attention. You walked away from that because you saw family as your raison d'etre, as your world, and you have, in a sense, made sacrifices in that direction. Have they been worth it?
Absolutely. I have loved and embraced and cherished every single memory made on the sporting field. And we've had some credible tours, achievements in France with fellow South Africans. I love and embrace this. And you talk about them when you're around the braai and you cherish them. But this chapter I'm in now has been more rewarding and more to work towards achieving things for those little girls. It does something else in you.
How did you meet your wife?
Oh, that's going way back. We met through a mutual friend, actually. Yeah, and it just grew from there.
And did you click instantly?
Yes. Yeah, we did. Okay. We did, yeah.
And how long have you been married?
I've been married for 6 years, 6.5 years.
Okay, and in those 6.5 years, you've managed to produce two beautiful little girls, and the future looks very well. Shall we say this? The teenage years are yet to come. Are you ready for them?
They are so, you know, as a parent, you always get forewarned about the next chapter, the colic, then the terrible twos. Oh. And we were so blessed. We didn't walk into that. We never had that. And I think, you know, life is tough enough. You need to surround yourself with people that sort of uplift you, not give you forewarning about what's coming, what's doom and gloom. So we're really blessed in that sense. And they've been two angels, complete opposites of each other. But we cherish every moment we have with them.
And what are your hopes for the future, business-wise and then, of course, family-wise?
So business-wise, you know, I'm aiming high. We're on 75,000 employees, and from the start, I've always, you know, aim for the stars and you hit the clouds or something like that. But I've always wanted to reach an executive position within the Fidelity Services Group, but to be the father that I've always wanted to be as well. So it's a balance. It's very tough, and you go through very challenging seasons in life as well. And it's only 2 or 3 weeks ago, but more than that, we were at church. And if you don't know Millie, you'll think I'll give her a Red Bull for breakfast, but she was wild. So I actually took her out of mass. We went to the repository where they hang the rosaries and the Bibles, and they had a little table outside, and it had about 5 or 6 books on it. Not for sale, but if you wanted to take one home and read it and return it afterwards. And one book caught my attention. It was It's Your Time, Joel Osteen. So Millie took me to that table, and I took the book home on a Sunday, and I read through 1 or 2 chapters. Monday morning, Daisy came to me and she said, "Dad, I think we need to start eating together at the dining room table again." And it's stuff that we hardly hear of these days. Since then, for the last month, every single night we've sat together at a family at the dining room table, TV off, and the conversation's crazy. I mean, Daisy, she'll be asking me, "Dad, if you were a dinosaur, which one would you be?" And she asked me a question like that. And while I'm half thinking what dinosaur I'm going to be, she said, "Dad, I love that painting behind you." And she pointed over my shoulder. And I looked back. It's a painting that's been hanging there for 6 years. And you know when pennies start dropping, puzzle pieces start aligning. And I excused myself from the table. With Daisy, you have to excuse yourself. Went through the kitchen and I picked up that book that I'd started reading. I sat back at the dining room table. I paged a few chapters back, page 15. And the story speaks of an executive who's sitting in his office with a large painting hanging behind him. It's a painting depicting a beautiful handcrafted boat stranded on the beach. No water around it. 20, 30 meters behind was the water line. It was low tide. Beautiful boat, two oars hanging gently from the boat onto the sand. And on the bottom right of the painting, it said, "Every tide returns." And that gave new meaning. It gave life to a painting, which is depressive. A boat sitting there, it's meant to be in the ocean, sailing the waves on the crest of the waves and stranded. Too big to move, too heavy to drag. And I read the story again to myself. And I turned around, and that exact painting is hanging in the dining room. And it's a big dining room. It's a 2.5 meter painting by 1.2. I've walked past it 1,000 times. I haven't looked twice.
How peculiar.
And for Daisy to bring me to the table, and that just shows me, you know, it's life is about seasons and tides. And no matter what you're going through now, you need to know your tide is returning. And for me personally, tides and seasons belong to God. And when that tide returns, that boat will be uplifted with its purpose. And it just shows you that you got to keep the bigger picture in mind. No matter what you're going through, focus on the bigger picture. And what those girls have done for me, the opportunities I've been given within the Fidelity Services Group, I believe I'm very much on track to get where I want to be and where I need to be now. But, you know, you just count your blessings living in Balito. And if I were to take off my Fidelity hat, and we are so incredibly blessed and safe in Balito. We are the caliber of security service providers that we have in this community that go out of their way, that have a community-first approach, who work together through their resources, sharing of intelligence, communications. And on top of that, we've got the Balito URP, the incredible work that they're doing for this community, the Balito Beach Collective, maintaining our beautiful promenades.
So, in every sense, this is the right place for you to raise your family, and you'd encourage, I'm sure, anyone listening to this that is thinking about finding a forever home somewhere. There's lots of ebbs and flows in South Africa, and lots of people are unsettled and uncertain of the future. Are you confident? Do you believe there is a future here?
The future is here. I think we are. I'm confident that this is one of the safest communities in South Africa to live. And if you look at the development, the type of development, what's happening at Zimbali Lakes Resort, Club Med is launching in the next 2 weeks. The drive and the demand that Balito has brought to itself. And it is such a privilege to live in this community and surround myself with the people that live in this community.
And clearly there are extraordinary people in
Absolutely.
The community.
Absolutely.
One of which, my special guest, Craig Burden, former rugby player with the Sharks and with the French teams in Europe. And now very proudly in business, in security on the North Coast, with a family that's growing and the future looking absolutely beautifully bright. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you,
sir. Till the next time. And the show continues, folks.